It's Wednesday, July 14th, 2021, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the studio in the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are my colleagues, Ron Kelly and Ernest Perry. On our program this week, did they or didn't they? Did they make it to space, that is? It depends on who you ask and what channel you were watching on Sunday. We're just more than a week out from the start of the 2020-2021 Summer Olympics in Japan. We're going to talk about the latest challenges facing journalists tasked with covering those games. And
one thing's for sure, I'm done running from my past.
Marvel's Black Widow brings in $80 million in box office receipts this weekend and $60 million in the sale of streaming licenses to Disney Plus subscribers. How does this bode for the future of feature films? There's a lot more that we're going to hopefully get to before our time is up today, but we're going to start on the environmental beat and a big announcement here at the Journalism School that is going to have ripple effects, if you will, pardon my pun, across a good chunk of the country. Thanks to a $1.4 million grant from the Walton Family Foundation, the School of Journalism is now the home of the Mississippi River Basin Ag and Water Desk. It's going to be an innovative approach to environmental and climate reporting. And Ernest, you're one of the advisors on this project. Talk a little bit more about the objectives and how it's envisioned to work.
Well, the objective of the desk is to bring to the Mississippi Basin region, which is stretches pretty much from Minnesota all the way down to Louisiana, along the Mississippi, news and information that is critical to the economic, political, and social and cultural aspects of the basin. And so not just agriculture will be a part of it. It's also going to be, you know, when it floods, what kind of impact does that bring? When we have a drought, what kind of impact does that bring? When we have various farm entities that are doing different things along the river basin, how is that having an impact? And there will be journalists at newspapers and other media outlets along that stretch who will be stationed at those newspapers, at those media outlets. And we will also have reporters who are connected to the desk that will be here in our region right here that will also work up and down the desk. So it's a huge undertaking.
Looking at the coverage map, which is something you can find by going to our links blog at kbia.org, one of the things I noticed is that the river basin, it is gigantic. I mean, I think I started losing count somewhere at around 20 or 21 states. It also looks like it expands into two Canadian provinces. Is this going to be strictly a domestic project, or will this move up and be more of a North American project that will look at what's going on in the just north of the border in Canada?
So we have two partners. One is the Society of Environmental Journalists, mm-hmm. Which is a national organization that represents science, ag, and in some cases health journalists. And then we also have Report for America, which is also entity as a partner, and they are working with newspapers up and down that stretch that you talked about. So it's mainly going to be domestic. That doesn't mean that it's not going to stretch into Canada when necessary, depending on what reporters in those particular areas see as critical issues or critical events that are happening in those particular areas.
This securing this grant was a large undertaking that there were many people both here within our school, some of those other partners you're talking about, Report for America, Society of Environmental Journalists, that there are also a lot of people in the area of climate science and in earth science reporting who weren't involved with this. And I kind of ran this by a couple of people I know in this area, and they were really impressed with the approach that this is going to take and pointing out that this is something really innovative to look at some of these issues from that perspective. Ron, as you look at this as somebody who maybe wasn't quite as involved, what impresses you about this?
I think it's impressive with bringing the Walton Family Foundation, the philanthropic interest into it. Mm-hmm. You've got a family foundation this is one of their initiatives. And so you've got them bringing their support, plus all these other interests like the Society of American Journalists, Report for America, mm-hmm. the Journalism School. You've got all these partners coming in to fill this need. along the Mississippi River Basin, right, yeah. To cover issues that are important to a lot of people, the environment, the climate. This affects people, our everyday people. And so I think a lot of times these issues don't get reported like they should be. And so this is going to bring a lot of attention to a topic that affects people every day, and hopefully along the river basin, get news to people and information to them about these topics.
One of the things that really impresses me, and regular viewers and listeners to the show know that I have a real issue with the term flyover country. This really puts the focus on environmental and agricultural reporting in that flyover country area. It's really looking at, and one of the other things that I point out to every one of our students as we talk about news values, what makes something newsworthy, weather is the one and only story we cover as journalists that affects everybody, regardless of race, class, education status. If it rains, everybody gets wet. If it floods, everybody is affected by that. Exactly. If there's drought, everybody goes thirsty.
Right. And one of the things here is that, so you have the desk that we're creating here. You also have a desk which is smaller along the Colorado that's operated by the University of Colorado and their program, which is also funded by the Walton Family Foundation. So if you took both of those, I mean, you've got a huge area of the country where you have these issues that are being covered specifically by journalists and others who are interested in what kind of impact are we having on communities by what we do in agriculture, by what we do in terms of water. How you talked about climate, how climate has changed and what is the impact of that up and down the basin and how it stretches out even further past that. Mm-hmm. You talked about the fact that there are 21 states involved in this. Some people would look at that and go like, okay, well, wait a minute, isn't that in the state of Georgia, which is a part of this, isn't it further away from the Mississippi? Yes, but when you start looking at the tributaries that feed into the Mississippi, that's when you start talking about the basin and the impact that that can have on those communities that rely on that as a source of water, as a source of income.
Yeah, and you talk about the tributaries and that great geography. You bring up Georgia. It also goes into the western part of New York State. Right. It goes all the way up and then as far east and west. Another story kind of on the environmental beat, it's definitely science. I woke up Sunday morning and saw a push alert that Virgin Galactic, the flight was gonna be postponed due to weather, and I went about my morning not realizing that they meant it was a short delay, just like a weather delay of any other commercial flight. But I was running around, I was watering my plants, doing laundry, and I heard this come from my TV.
And that is a full duration burn, folks. We are headed to space. And the passengers in the back have been cleared to unstrap. Our predicted apogee is 279,000 feet and climbing.
So it was cool, but in a lot of ways, I think I was expecting a little bit more. That actual space flight, and you can kind of see the air quotes there. It was only, we're going to talk about that part in a second, but it was only 4 minutes long. I guess I wanted something more out of that.
Yeah, I thought it was cool too, but the buildup of the coverage was kind of anticlimactic a little bit, yeah.
Talk about what makes you say that.
There was just so much coverage of it, and you know, between Branson and Bezos and the competition between who's going to do it first. And then once they got there and you see the coverage of it, but you don't really get to see them doing anything. And so
hard to do anything in 4 minutes. Just saying.
Exactly. Well, exactly. So it was just seeing them up in the rocket, just seeing the rockets. So it was just.
Well, and so here's that other part too. So let me ask you, in your opinion, Ernest, did they go to space?
I don't know. I mean, okay, they were up there for 4 minutes that they were in. If experts, some experts, say that they went into space, then they went into space. But they were only there for 4 minutes. They kind of floated around a little bit, and then they came back down. I mean, this was more about Branson hyping what he does. I mean, he's done this over and over throughout his career. The guy has a lot of money. He spends it on things that normal people would not necessarily... Well, normal people don't have that kind of money, but if they did, I don't think that this would be one of the things they're spending it on.
It was brilliant public relations campaign.
Absolutely,
It was. And it was a brilliant public relations campaign at every stop.
Yep.
Because... As I'm watching this, and I was watching it, I think, on MSNBC and flipping to CNN at one point, which is something else we'll talk about in a second. But one of the things I noticed was as soon as the craft came back down and there was the parade of the Land Rovers, whoever the reporter was on the ground who they went to talk to said, yes, and that's most definitely Land Rovers, another one of the partners in this program, that this was very much a commercial effort that was entirely about branding and staying on brand from beginning to end.
Exactly.
I mean, to me, you know, I think both of these, I mean, the whole sort of competition things between Branson and Bezos is also about them being able to promote their brands and to build this out. It wasn't so much about either of these missions. It's more about what's going to come afterwards. What are they going to build after that? That's what this is really about.
I'm not sure the public really cared that much about this.
Talk about what you mean, because this is where I want to go next. Tell me what you mean.
Because I'm not sure there was a lot of buzz about it amongst everyday people.
Amongst anyone?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't heard anybody talk about it.
Right. No, yes. And I'm telling you, I saw that thing on the push alert, and I was like, oh, all right. And I went and bought laundry detergent, and I did laundry, and I did dishes, and just looked up and saw, like, oh, wait, this happened. It wasn't like when... There was, I'm trying to remember, what was that mission not all that long ago where we were all, it was shortly after the beginning of COVID, and it was like, hey, maybe there are things that aren't that terrible because people were sitting around and watching this launch. It may have been SpaceX when SpaceX went up. But, you know, one of the other things that was interesting when you talk about this very highly orchestrated PR campaign, the networks didn't cut in. This was solely a made-for-cable news event that never transcended from that level.
Well, to me, it was one of those things where, and this is where I think cable really sort of helped both Branson and will help Bezos when he goes up, is that they need material other than COVID and the Delta variant, other than infrastructure, other than the critical race theory and all the other things that is sort of dominating the news. They want to have something that's
different,
fun.
Yes, it's 24/7 news operation, so they've got to put something on.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is something different than some of the other topics that are going on around the country and the world.
So do you think, as we look to what will be happening, it's scheduled to be next Tuesday that Jeff Bezos and his Blue Origin shuttle is supposed to launch, do we think people are going to care about that one, or do we think that we're just as much over this?
I don't know. I mean, you know, a lot of it's going to depend on what happens between now and then. I mean, I think the in the lead up to that launch, it's going to be, well, is he going to stay more than 4 minutes? Is he going to actually do an orbit? What is he going to do that's different? You know, that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I will watch Tuesday.
Or not.
It depends if there's laundry to do or plants to water. President Biden signed an executive order this past week that has television journalists across the country talking. It basically makes non-compete clauses unenforceable for as many as 60 million Americans in lots of different industries, not just in TV news. But for journalists, this is a really big deal because for so many who are under contract, if they're in a job situation where they're unhappy or want to consider something else, they're basically left with a handful of options to stay in a job where perhaps they're unhappy or underpaid. They have the option of leaving and then kind of what we would say colloquially sitting on the beach, waiting out a non-compete clause where they can't work in the same market for another maybe 6 months or a year. This is a big deal. People are talking about this, Ron.
They are, because non-compete clauses affects people's wages. It doesn't help them. It limits people's options, like you said.
Yeah.
not only journalists. It doesn't affects more than just journalists. It affects coffee shop baristas. I know some coffee shop baristas can't move to another coffee shop within 10 miles of.
Oh, because you could end up taking the recipe and making something.
Or whatever.
Oh, I did not even consider
or
that.
Or customers
idea.
For that matter.
Or customers, yeah.
Right. Because so and so makes my latte just right.
Yeah, restaurant chefs can't move to other restaurants within the same city. Salon hairdressers. So this affects 16 to 18% of American workers that are subject to non-compete clauses. And especially workers who earn less than $40,000 that are in these non-compete clauses. And so it affects wages because you're stuck in this job and the employer knows that. And so sometimes they don't give you more money because they know that you can't move.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the way it really affects, will help journalists is that, now you can, if this holds, you can move to that rival station.
Right.
And not have to wait 6 months or wait a year. Or in some cases, most journalists will have to move to another city in order to get away from the non-compete clause.
Yep.
And so that really is what's going to, I think, help at least the journalists. Now, there may be some upset among the various stations and media outlets within a particular area about how
be competitive and treat your people right.
Well, absolutely.
You'll keep them.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Or maybe the person just wants to leave because, hey, I can go over here and work the primetime shift as opposed to working the early morning shift at this station. So,
so we'll give workers a lot more options.
It will give them more options. I also think as we talk about how this will, and you were starting to hint at this a little bit, I think, Ernest, the idea too that journalists are in a position now in order to kind of beat out the non-compete of moving to another city.
Right.
If we have journalists, and I think about even, and journalists in markets like Columbia don't necessarily face non-competes in the same way, but I'm thinking about markets where journalists will often cut their teeth and then move on. If they have the ability to more easily move from one newsroom to another, you're keeping that institutional knowledge and the trust a journalist builds up over time in that market, in that community.
Yep. Exactly.
And creating a better environment for both reporting and for the dissemination.
Yeah, and I also think that, to a certain extent, these non-compete clauses have gotten out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And employers are using them in some ways as retaliation to keep someone from benefiting, even if they don't want to keep them.
Yeah.
I'm happy to let you go, but you're still sitting out that time. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't go to this other place.
Yeah. Yeah. Or some companies that will enforce the non-compete not only in the market you're in, but every market where they own a TV station. And in some cases, that could be 200 markets, the way TV ownership works now.
Right, right. But this was happening in the tech sector, and that's what really got the pushback from progressives that got Biden's ear to say, okay, you do have a problem here, because in the tech sector, they were basically holding them to these non-competes, so they couldn't go, and it didn't even matter whether you were going to another city or someplace else. You just couldn't take your talents and go somewhere else until after the non-compete was over.
And there's already a couple states that don't have this: California, Oklahoma, and North Dakota, all places. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Good for labor. I suppose many will say better late than never. Next Friday, the 2021. Olympic Games will open in Tokyo's Olympic Stadium. Athletes will compete in 339 events across 42 venues. And like everything else in 2020 and 2021, these games are going to look different. For instance, forget what the calendar says. These are the 2020 games. And that's what you're going to see in graphics and logos and all of the references. And due to a recent spike in COVID cases in and around Tokyo, many of the events will go on without any spectators in the stands. And Ron, it's already hard, especially when we're here in the United States, games are happening in Asia, in different countries where there are significant time zone shifts. To get television audiences, NBC's gotten kind of creative about this. What other challenges are they going to run into now, not having any of the human interest stories to really play into as well?
Yeah, I think it's just going to be hard. not having fans there, you're not going to have the emotion, the excitement, and they're going to have to find, be really creative in how they produce these games. And I'm not sure what that's going to look like.
Yeah, to me, I think part of the issue for them is going to be, as Ron said, you know, how are you going to make that work? Are you going to, you know, because it's not just the fact that they're not going to have crowds in the stands.
Right.
You're not even going to be able to have crowds in the streets or crowds at the bar to be yes. able to maybe, okay, if I can't get them in the stadium, maybe I'll go to the bar where they're looking at it. Well, that's not the case mm-hmm. either. So now you've got this problem where are we going to find people to actually comment on the fact that, you know, someone won something for the first time, or there was an upset in, say, in the basketball tournament, or you know, the Americans were expected to win this, but the Japanese person won. I mean, where are you going to get that? So it's going to be very difficult.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to resort. I mean, you know, with the NBA and the baseball.
Major League Baseball, yeah.
Yeah, they use, you know, noise sounds.
Piping in
noise sounds. Yeah. I'm not sure how that's going to work with the Olympics.
It could work on radio. It just seemed awkward to me when they did. Like, I found myself watching more Korean baseball, actually, during the height of the pandemic when that was happening.
Yeah, they're going to be real creative, like miking the coaches mm-hmm. and those kinds of things. And I don't know, just around the venues.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the athletes.
I just, you know, I don't know. The other challenge they're going to have is, and they're really afraid of this, both the organizers as well as NBC and the other partners, is what if you have a COVID outbreak
mm-hmm.
in the middle of this? I mean, you're talking about a 2-week competition.
Yeah.
And they're in a bubble, but not really in a bubble, because you got 42 venues. So what do you have, 42 separate bubbles? I mean, the potential for athletes to come up positive during this is huge, and some of them have already come up positive and won't even be able to make the trip over. So, I mean, that's going to be the underlying drama that's going on for the entire 2 weeks.
So NBC launched Peacock last summer as it was going to be the big reveal, and using the Olympics as the showcase for that. They're kind of having the delayed start now, hoping that the 24/7 availability of different events will help launch that. And so Peacock users and cable subscribers will have access to a 24/7 stream of Olympic coverage during this time. One of the other things that was interesting to me is that they are going to have premium coverage, if you will, that will only involve one sport. If you want to watch, Ernest is
basketball.
Giving me the look. Yes.
Yes.
If you want to watch men's basketball on Peacock, the only way to do that is to subscribe to Peacock for the $4.99 a month subscription fee.
That's going to upset a lot of people.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how much that, especially in light of the fact that in two of the three exhibition games of the U.S. team, they've lost to Nigeria. Okay, was the first team they lost to, and I can't remember who the second one was. And then they finally won the third one, and people are going like, wait a minute, you want me to pay $4.99 to watch an American team?
Lose to Nigeria.
Yeah.
there's another feature that you can get for free on Peacock. So Bob Costas is no longer doing the Olympics, having retired in 2017. And Ron's giving me the look, because he knows where I'm going with this. Kevin Hart and Snoop Dogg will have a highlight show on Peacock every night.
As Olympic commentators.
Okay.
I've rendered that, Ernest Perry speechless.
But that might be worth the $4.99.
But
that might be worth the $4.99.
So you'll pay $4.99 for Snoop Dogg and Kevin Hart, not for
men's basketball.
Not for men's basketball.
Okay, so with that one, we are also at the point with the Olympics. It's July. It's also time for those long-awaited summer blockbuster movies. Last weekend, it was the newest Marvel flick, Black Widow. It was opening simultaneously in theaters and on Disney Plus, where subscribers could watch and then own a digital copy for $30. Opening weekend box office numbers here in the U.S., well, they came in at approximately $80 million at the box office and another $60 million through the Disney streaming site. Ernest, you're our Marvel man. I'm kind of shocked to hear that we're at Wednesday already. You haven't watched this yet.
I've been busy.
Okay, fair enough. When you do, Is it going to be streaming or in the theater?
I'm not sure yet. I kind of want to go back to the theater just to, because I enjoyed that experience so much, and it's been over a year and a half since the last time I was in a movie theater, so I kind of want to go back. Mm-hmm. But I'm still a little hesitant, so this might be I'm going to check it out on Disney Plus and watch it that way.
Or if you're hesitant, it's summer. We all have a couple of days coming off. There's always the matinee.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, but to look at it, I mean, so if you look at the numbers, okay, yeah. You have the 60,000, correct, is what they brought mm-hmm. in on Disney Plus, mm-hmm. right?
That's $60 million.
Yeah. Sorry, I mean, $60 million. That's huge.
Okay.
And I think what it shows is that this might show that the streaming services are here to stay. I'm not necessarily giving up on the movie theaters yet, because that was a pretty good number, especially in light of the fact that we still have, you know, still have COVID in hot spots all over the country, including where we live here in Missouri. But to be able for Disney Plus to pull in that much money, that's going to signal to all the other streaming services that, hey, this might be viable if you have the right movie.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and you have to keep in mind, too, that movies were having some issues before COVID hit.
That's right.
Uh-huh. People weren't going to the movie theaters as much as they were before. So this could be an interesting trend to see what happens as this continues.
I'm also interested in seeing, too, again, in the category of movies I would not likely choose to watch myself, this weekend the Space Jam sequel comes out, and that will be a theatrical release and free to subscribers of HBO Max for 30 days. So I think I'm also going to be interested in seeing which one of these models ends up winning out. If they do continue the dual release, is it going to be kind of that pay-per-view and have a copy to access whenever, mm-hmm. or is it going to be that short-term release?
Well, I mean, I think you could see it both ways. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you those who are Marvel fans, mm-hmm. the really... Yeah, but I'm not the one that's going to spend $30 on a digital copy. But you do have somewhere out there who do it. So they're going to do that. The question becomes, if Space Jam is a kid movie, will parents do that? So you could have those two revenue streams that work to where you have, okay, my kid's going to watch this over and over and over again, so yeah, I'm going to buy this copy. Or I'm a true Marvel fan, and I have all the other movies, and I'm going to have this one too. That could be where they really make their money.
Exactly.
Okay. Quickly, before we go today, my new favorite two-sport athlete.
M-U-R-R-A-Y-A.
That is correct.
So that is Ayla Avant-Garde, the Scripps National Spelling Bee champion and holder of 3 world records in her first sport, basketball. And this remarkable speller just started spelling 14 years ago. The first African-American black speller
14 months ago, right?
14 months ago. Did I say 14 years? Yeah. She's 14 years old. Yeah, she's only been spelling about a year and a half, 2 years. But, yeah, sorry. Good catch on that one, Dennis. But the part that's also really been interesting is the look that I will admit I learned a lot about this story. You can take a look at on our links blog about the history of the spelling bee and how black children have been traditionally excluded from that going back decades.
Yeah, it's something that is a part of our history, and these are one of those discriminatory ways in which we were excluded from many of the things that we claim are American.
Yeah, well, I wish we had more time to talk about that. I encourage everybody to go to our links blog, check out that story. We are out of time for today. I'd like to thank you for spending the last half hour with us. You can read more about each of these topics on our links blog. You can also find podcast downloads. All of that is at KBIA.org. I'd like to thank RJI's Travis McMillan for directing today's show and Aaron Hay for handling the audio. Tim Pilcher composed our original theme music. I'm Amy Simons. Be sure to join us again next week when we're back with you for another edition of Views of the News.